car came later. The first person we interviewed actually was Mitch Mitchell from Jimi Hendrix, because the Hendrix Experience had just broken up recently, and we thought maybe we'd talk to Mitch. And I saw Mitch when I got back to England and talked to him, and he suggested getting hold of Jimmy and seeing if it could be a four-piece band.
Wow.
And we were going to do that. And in the meantime, while Mitch was pulling it together, we got a call from a man called Robert Stigwood. Mm-hmm. He was the manager of the Cream and Bee Gees. And he called me up and said, "Look, Greg, I've got the perfect drummer for you." And I said, "Really?" And he said, "Yeah, it's a guy called Carl Palmer." He said, "You might not have heard of him, but he's really, really good, and I'm sure he'd be perfect for you." Anyway, we said, "Okay, let's have a look at him." We set up an audition the next day in Soho, in a little studio in Soho, and he came along and he played. And it was instant. The chemistry was instant. We could, Keith and I recognized it immediately, and we recognized that we really had found the band. And that was it. We made the decision on the spot to accept that as the band we would keep. And so we never went back to Mitch at all. And sadly, I mean, a few weeks after that, Jimmy was found dead, sadly, in a flat in London. And so, you know, any idea of working with him was of course, it would never happen. But that was how ELP was formed.
What was the first track that you worked on and produced?
God, I can't remember, to be honest with you. It was probably Rondo from The Nice. Those were the first things we played in the audition, because we hadn't written any new music. Right. It was just, we just formed a band. I mean, this happened in a matter of days. So we were playing music from the past. I think I had written Take a Pebble, and we played that. And that was one way we knew that the band had a great dynamic ability, because we could play something intense like Rondo and then play something really delicate like Take a Pebble. And that was important for Keith and I, because we really based our music more upon European influence rather than American blues and soul and gospel.
Why did you decide to record Pictures at an Exhibition as a live album rather than a studio piece?
It came about simply because, well, the whole way Pictures happened was quite strange, because it was really an accident. We never sat down and decided to make Pictures at an Exhibition a big thing for ELP. What happened was Keith came in one day and he just had a piece of music, and he used it for practicing. And while he was practicing on the piano in the rehearsal room, I started playing the bass along with him. And then eventually Carl joined in. So we had three of us playing this piece, Pictures, at an exhibition. And it started to sound really good. And so every time we went to the rehearsals, we learned a little bit more of it, just for fun. And at the end of it, we were playing sort of 15 minutes of it in one hit. We were at some show, and just for fun, we decided to play it. I mean, we thought it would die a death, to be honest with you. But just the opposite. We played it, and it went down a storm. Well, you know what happened? It became a platinum record.
I've heard that Trilogy was one of your favourite albums.
I think there was an era. ELP's finest moments were Tarkus, Trilogy and Brain Salad Surgery. Mm-hmm. It was when the band were at their peak. It was original. The music was not like anything else. It was unique, powerful, and it was inspired. And so that was the period when I looked to ELP and say, well, there's our very best work, I think. And if you, and you're right, if I had to pick one album, I suppose it would be Trilogy. I've just got a soft spot for it. It was so heavily overdubbed that we never really got to do it much live. But that was the reason, of course, we made the following album, Brain Salad Surgery, in a very live way.
Welcome back, my friends, to the show that never ends. We're so glad you could attend. Come inside, come inside. There behind the glass stands a real blade of grass. Be careful as you pass. Move along, move along.
We actually bought a cinema in London to make the album in, because we decided that this time we would make an album that we could play live. And so we've set up on the stage, and that is, of course, where Welcome Back, My Friends, to the Show That Never Ends came from. We decided to write the song as if it was a parade running past your eyes of these different things, you know. Some of them tangible, some of them not. But they were images. They were all peculiar images.
You took a little bit of a hiatus and put out the Works Volume 1 album and Works Volume 2. Would it be right in saying, or wrong in saying, that there's almost less collaboration on those and more wing stretching for each of the members in the band?
Well, I think that is true to say. The good news is that they were good. They were really good records. I mean, in and of themselves, there were some lovely songs on there. Keith did his piano concerto, which was very nice. Some beautiful playing and music by him. We have this piece, Pirates, on there too, which I've always really liked.
Drink a toast with me, I give you liberty. This town is ours. Tonight!
That was the good news. The bad news was that it was the beginning of the end of ELP. The band was fracturing. We each were sort of wanting to go our own separate ways, I think. And no longer was it the ELP of the Tarkus Trilogy Brain Salad Surgery era. It had become more conservative, orchestral. You know, although the things were high quality, you had heard the sounds before. After that, we never really made any more records that were anywhere near as good as the early albums.
Is there anything that you're listening to at the moment that that gets you excited?
The last artist I really was impressed with was Adele. A remarkable talent. I'm also keen on Brad Paisley, country artist, fabulous guitar player.
Oh, he's amazing.
Great writer.
Yeah. Can you give us a little taste as to what might be on the set list for the San Francisco show?
Do you know, I'd rather not talk about the set list. Part of the beauty of the show is the shock value. And I will change the show around a bit. So, you know, I'm not even going to allow people to guess what's up there. Because, you know, part of the thing of being entertaining, I think, is surprise. And I did mention this before, is if anyone thinks that it's just a sort of one-man folk type, sit on a stool, tell stories thing, no, it's not. It's highly dynamic. It's highly produced, actually. I think it's a very unique show. I've never done anything quite like it. And the reaction to it is fabulous. I mean, it really is stunning. It's everything I could have wished for. This is a journey that we've shared together. We're talking about 40 years of music. coming down the pipes in one night, and with stories that mean something to people, and also their stories that mean something to each other and to me. And so it's a unique experience. So I recommend anybody to come. And who was on that journey? If you're on that journey, you know, don't miss it, because it's fun. It's a lovely show.
Fantastic. We totally respect you keeping everything under wraps. We wish you so much success with the tour. We'll be there in San Francisco. Just can't wait. And just want to say, Greg, thank you so much for taking the time to talk with us today. We really appreciate it.
Thank you very much. You're really my pleasure. It was a lovely interview. Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye. Bye.
He had white horses and ladies by the score, all dressed in satin and waiting by the door. Ooh, what a lucky man he was. Ooh, what a lucky man he was. White lace and feathers, they made up his bed, a gold-covered mattress on which he was led. Ooh, what a lucky man he was. Ooh, what a lucky man he was.
Ooh, what a lucky man he was.